I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, it's 8 past 12. Yes, Adam Carter gave me the double middle finger when he saw me today.
One. I had stuff in my other hand.
Oh, that's right. That's right, you did.
I would have.
Yes.
Well, I kept hearing, you know, quick honks and like, who's honking?
Quick honks. I mean, are you used to longer honks?
Well, if you want to get somebody's attention, you're going to lay on the horn. I mean, it's downtown. People honk all the time.
I don't think we do honk all the time. I think we're a very uptight honking community. I think the horn is used, it's underused. This guy, middle guy over here, Cook, he's all uptight about the honker. He doesn't think the honker
completely
should be
overused.
Used at all. No.
No, it should only be used in emergency situations. No. If you're about to run into somebody, that's what the horn's there for. Hey, by the way, I'm here. Look at me. We talk about distracted driving all the time. It's more important than ever. And you clowns are running around beeping at everything you see, and so then Adam just ignores it.
Adam, put him in his place. Go ahead.
It's going to be used, but there's multi-functions for
yes.
it. You're about to back into me, so you give a quick dit, dit, dit.
Yep.
Yes.
You're not moving fast enough.
Yep.
Beep.
No. Yeah. No. You're not. What a jerk move that was. Yeah. I mean, that one's got
Hello,
a little velocity.
Dit, 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 dit.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Beep, 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 right? I mean, again, this goes back to the greatest invention that will happen and it will take off, the electronic message on the front of the car and the back of the car, and I've added to it now.
Oh, good.
I've added to it now.
Emojis?
Wasn't bad enough.
Oh, emojis, yes, that's nice. No, you then push an extra button and the audio is said out of the car. So like there,
singularly the worst.
I would have said, "Hey, you know, bleep face, it's me over here." I would have said to you, Carter. I would have hit that. Boom. That now, other people may have thought it was directed to them at that point. You would have known, and right away, I think if I would have said that with the car, I think you would have put what you were holding in your left hand, put that down, and given me the double middle finger. Is the middle finger used enough? Is it overused? Where do you stand on that?
I think it's properly used.
Properly used.
Way overused.
It's way overused?
Way overused, yep.
I don't think the middle finger is used very often.
I have so many questions at this point.
Yes.
First of all, whose voice would be coming? I mean, are we talking celebrity voices? Are we talking Siri's voice?
Nice touch.
Whose voice is coming?
See, now, Adam and Dan has now added to it. Like, you know, like with the...
It's still a horrible idea.
With the phone, you know, you're going to have the Australian accent. Here, you could have it in your own voice. But, Adam, you would have a selection of voice. And I think it's even better. The voice would change depending upon your message. If it's, hey, how you doing? It's like George Clooney, right? It's like a really handsome, it's who are the hunks of today? It's Ryan Gosling. But if you're mad, it's kind of a menacing, tough guy voice.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah. I'm coming for you.
He might be a little quiet, though. I mean, you really want somebody that can boom, don't you?
You don't think Liam Neeson's a tough guy enough?
Well, no, I'm saying he's tough, but when he gets tough, he gets really quiet.
And yeah, but sometimes that works. Sometimes
I don't know, in a big open area, I mean, is there people going to be able to hear it? See, here's what I want to really go back to.
Yeah.
Is that ultimately the fact that you were told you were number one in this situation is your fault because you guys have so desensitized people to the horn that the reason that Adam was ignoring you is because we hear the horn often.
He was
And
not.
He so was then not. When he finally got his attention, then he had to tell you you were number one. It's
he was
your
not.
Fault.
In fact, he's proven to be a fraud because he is touted in very skillfully spatial awareness. He's talked about spatial awareness. But when I hit the horn the first time, this guy couldn't figure out where the horn was coming from. I saw him. His head was pivoting left and right.
Because it was a pointless – the circumstance was not – the light had not changed yet. So usually you hear that horn, you're thinking somebody isn't moving because the light has changed.
This was a greeting horn. This was a hello, hey, it's me over here horn.
Well, I could reveal what kind of car you were driving, and then I would say, well, that's typical coming from a snob driving a vehicle like that. So that's why I was desensitized.
A Prius, okay? There's nothing wrong with a Prius, right? I mean,
another typical, you know.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Businessman, you know, with his BMW, you're not trying to get out of town.
It's not that. Yeah, I'm dressed like a businessman today, right? Short sleeve shirt, shorts. Yeah, I mean, were you embarrassed at all to give me the finger right there in front of all of America?
Well, there was quite a few people around me, too.
Yes, there
I
was.
Know. Like, wow, that guy's pretty intense. He doesn't like that guy.
Yeah, no. Well, that's true, right? But yeah, that's the story. How would you have greeted me, Dan, if I would have hit the horn?
I would have completely ignored you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you do. We call you on your birthday, and you've hung up on us before.
Yes. Multiple times, as I recall,
yeah.
Before you finally figured out that I wasn't going to take that call.
You regret that now, right? When a colleague was calling you to wish you
not even a
happy
bit.
Birthday, not even and it was, boom, click.
Never has the thought of regret entered my mind at any point over having done that.
Adam, do you think he's saying that, or do you think he really means that?
I know he really means
that. Yeah, I think he does,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
How about you? If I call you on your birthday, would you have just...
A text will do. That's okay.
You see?
How about even from the girls? If the girls call you, would you just text them back, hey, just send a message.
Yeah.
Right? You don't need
throw
to
throw in a GIF or an emoji or something, it'll be fine.
Exactly. One serious guest and one regular guest. As I'm fighting some off, which I'm not enjoying. Dara Moskowitz Grumdahl. Dear Dara. She's with us. Food with Dara 235 and the Middle East, where are we headed with Iran, with Saudi Arabia, with the Israeli elections? Aaron David Miller has joined us many times over the years. He's a senior fellow for the Carnegie Endowment. He is with us in less than 20 minutes. Another reason why the college located in Madison is superior to the college located in Minneapolis. Let's discuss when we come back. They're better. They've been better for... Well, I'll tell you when they've been better since. Wisconsin in basketball since 1995. They were a dumpster fire forever, and then they hired Dick Bennett. And since then, they have lapped the Gophers over and over and over again. Obviously, now there's Arizona State University. They both can have a dream, but they will not reach that level. So I'm reacting to this because Richard Pitino, who still may have success with this recruiting class and still may have success with out-state kids. And if they play and they have success with the U, I don't think it should matter if they're from Tempe, Arizona, or they're from South St. Paul. But here's where it does matter. If you continue to have greater success of high school basketball and you have – and you now literally can win at a very high level with Minnesota kids. Forever in this state, with so many of the sports outside of hockey, you had to try to close the borders, but you had to win elsewhere. Marcus Fuller writes about it. There could be 9 kids that go to Power 5 conferences. This isn't new just for the upcoming 2021. The high school basketball has been improving in this state for a number of years, but they lose more kids. They have other kids where they're mentioned in the mix, but none right now have an official visit scheduled at the U. Others who are from out state, from out of the state, they have taken visits. But you now have the new guy, Greg Gard, who we don't know yet if he's any good. We know Dick Bennett was very good. We know Bo Ryan was great. Greg Gard, so far. But recruiting-wise, starting to dominate this state. They might have 8 Minnesotans on their club for not this upcoming season, for the following season. And people are like, well, geez, why does this keep happening? Let me just remind you again. Minnesota Gopher basketball hasn't been any good on a consistent level regarding upper-level success since the 70s and early 80s. I'll repeat it. This is one of the most notable stats in Minnesota sports, and I beat it in the ground, and it's like people forget about it. They haven't, men's basketball, haven't finished higher than fourth place since 1982 in the Big Ten. 97 was wiped away. It was fun. We saw it. We enjoyed it. Bobby Jackson, Brilliant, Harris, all those guys. But guess what? They were cheating. For Russ Archambault, by the way. So it was wiped away. Adam Carter, think about that. Since 1982. How old are you in 1982?
I was seven.
7 years old. That's when they won the Big Ten championship. With a great team. Since then, they're not even mediocre. Dan, if you haven't finished above fourth, you're not mediocre. I don't know if you're flat out lousy, but you're just stuck in the middle.
Right. By a fluke or something, you should pop into the top four once in a while, shouldn't you?
Correct. So your club turned it all around in 1995 when Richard Bennett was hired. And I see that in 1997, they won. They had a winning Big Ten record for the first time in 23 years. Think about that. First winning record in 23 years. And since then, they have finished. Did you track it all
yeah.
down?
So yeah. They finished first or second in the Big Ten six times in that stretch from 95.
Yep.
They finished in the top three 10 times, and they finished in the top four, looks like 16 times.
Think about that. There's no comparison.
No, and it's not close.
It's not. It is not close. So who would blame a kid for going to a program which has dominated this matchup? Again, Richard Pitino, the last three years, twice to the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe him when he says this. If they stay healthy, the team which did not go to the tournament sure looked like it was their best team, right? It looked like a team that had a chance to be very good, but they were ravaged by injuries that year. So Pitino might have this turn in the right way. May. He's had some success with Minnesota recruits. Look at the three guys on the team this year. And obviously Amir just left. But when it's getting even better and you keep missing out, that will send a warning sign. And I know there are so many people around the program who feel like, well, they need to get players into the NBA. And then I keep hearing from some people, well, you know, it's look, this year now they got Jordan Murphy and Amir Coffey. Are you kidding me? Are you honestly kidding me? Jordan Murphy is going to training camp with the Wolves, and then he's going to Iowa. Amir wasn't even drafted. Maybe is the last guy in the Clippers. Maybe, but more likely than not, he goes to the Clippers affiliate. That is not going to turn the corner. Yes, it helps if you have NBA players, but it helps even more if you have sustained success. And when people say, God, don't they think of the 70s and 80s when it was great? What?
No, 18-year-olds don't think of that at all.
No, Adam was 7. He's now 44.
I don't think of that.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, and Pitino said it when we had him on at the fair. And I like Richard. I think he's a very relatable person. He's funny. You know, where is he as a coach? I don't really know yet. Is he good? Is he very good? Is he not good enough?
TBD.
I think it's the jury's still out.
Sure.
The barn's great if it's a February game and you're watching the Gophers and Badgers. Barn's not so great if you're going in there to recruit kids. The barn's not so great when you're walking them around compared to all these other facilities. So who in the hell should be surprised by what's happened with these recruits? Make it, and if they're taking heat, then you're a dope. They just made the right decision. And by the way, went to a great school. By the way, a fun campus. Wow. Who would want to go play for a program that's had success now for 20-some years in a setting where it's pretty damn good right there on the – I think it's on the Atlantic Ocean.
So, I think that's glad. The body water. I'm so glad we figured out how to roll tape, so I have this in the bank.
Well,
I can't disagree with anything that you said.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's fantastic. The only other thing that I guess I would go back to is when you talked about getting guys to the NBA. Yes, you've had the Kaminskys, and yes, you had Sam Decker come out of Wisconsin. But it's not like Wisconsin's been an NBA factory. It's not like they've been cranking out NBA player after
absolutely
NBA.
Not.
So it's, I think, you know, your point about the sustained success is much more responsible for seeing the influx of kids from Minnesota going.
I'm just saying the Gopher supporters keep saying
sure.
They need to
and
get,
I think that's making an excuse for the fact that you don't have sustained success, so it's got to be something else.
Yeah.
No, it's just win on a regular basis. Put together a program and a system that wins on a regular basis, and you'll draw kids.
Now, if my father was here, Carter, and he was 15 years younger, he'd say, they're done. They won't get a job in this town, right? But I don't think he says that anymore. I think right now
I heard it recently. No.
I think now he'd say, hey, they probably made a good decision. Because track record-wise, it's not even close. 28 past 12, an update from Adam in a matter of moments. On important issues related to the Middle East, this man, Aaron David Miller, is one of the preeminent voices. He is kind enough to join us. He right now is a senior fellow for the Carnegie Endowment. He has worked with the Department of State for 24 years, 78 to 03. He served six different secretaries of state as an advisor with Arab-Israeli negotiations, participant in efforts to broker peace, Israel, Jordan, Syria, and the Palestinians. Aaron, it is a pleasure to always have you on. Let me start with the latest on the attack towards Saudi Arabia. We still have the Secretary of State saying it is an act of war. We have the president meeting with top Pentagon officials today. If the United States is going to respond on the military side, do you expect that to happen soon?
Let me just start by creating a frame here. Having worked for Republicans and Democrats and voted for Republicans and Democrats, I've watched the United States wander around in this region like some modern-day Gulliver tied up by smaller powers whose interests are often not their own and by our own illusions. And so let me be clear about this issue. President Trump has no good options regarding Iran in the wake of these recent strikes on Saudi oil facilities, which are considerable. I mean, the Iranians have crossed, by any standard, a kind of red line. But the choices for this country on this issue are between, I would argue, very bad and worse. Using the U.S. military to strike Iran or even its offshore oil platforms or facilities, even if the strike is proportionate, I would argue represents the latter, the worse option, largely, in my judgment, because it's just unrelated or untethered from any attainable goal that would deter Iran from further attacks. And whether or not the Iranians pulled back for a time, sooner or later, you'd create an escalatory cycle that could get into a situation that's impossible to control. So the president, this president, who in my judgment is very risk-averse, and if you looked at his behavior over the last several years, it's clearly designed to, like many of his foreign policy initiatives, on this one I agree, but on many others I don't, designed to accomplish campaign commitments that he's made to get America out of unwinnable wars, see Iraq and Afghanistan, and not into new ones, see a confrontation with the Iranians. The last thing he wants, I would think, going into the 2020 elections, is a situation in which the United States becomes bogged down in an asymmetrical conflict in the Gulf, in Iran's neighborhood, with all the tools at their disposal, triggering what could be not just oil spikes, but a sustained rise in the level of oil prices, gas prices, heating oil prices, which is going to affect the global economy, which is already slowing down. So I think that the administration, if I'm reading them right so far, they're slow walking this. They are being incredibly deliberate and incredibly cautious. Now, at the end of the road, it still may lead to a strike. But this is not August 1990. Just to remind you, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and threatened not just an oil facility, but threaten the stability of Saudi Arabia. And then President George H.W. Bush, for whom I worked for Secretary Baker, basically made the correct call that this would not stand. And they waged a very deliberate military campaign, which didn't solve the problem of Saddam Hussein. George W. Bush, the son, tried to do that in March of 2003, and you saw the impact, the effect of that. But that's not what we're facing here. The fact is, Chad, we have sold the Saudis billions of dollars worth of high-end prestige aircraft and tanks.
Well, can I just jump in on that? Because yeah. I was going there next, right? Because I'm glad you laid out the very, very difficult challenges the president faces. President Trump, President Obama, President Bush, we can go back for decades. This country, Saudi Arabia, has been buying an extraordinary amount of our top-flight military equipment, either to defend themselves or to protect themselves. In this case, is it just on the government of Saudi Arabia themselves to respond?
Oh, I would argue we've sold them all these high prestige F-15s, but what we've never done, and what the Saudis and the Gulf states have never done, is to create an integrated air defense system to deal precisely with this problem. Now, against drones and low-flying cruise missiles, admittedly, it's hard. But I think this reflected not only the lack of proper air defenses, but a lack of imagination. Nobody was anticipating the Iranians or the Houthis, the Yemeni groups that the Iranians are supporting largely to stick it to the Saudis in Yemen in their backyard and create as much difficulty for the Saudis as possible, struck a few pipelines several months ago using drone strikes. But nobody anticipated a strike on these two oil processing facilities, which resulted in taking offline half of Saudi's 10 million barrels per day production. So it's a failure of imagination. It's a failure to get their priorities right. The Saudis, Chad, have the fourth, ready for this? The fourth largest military budget in the world. And I'm sorry, I worked for the Bush 41 administration and going to war to push Saddam out of Kuwait and to protect the Gulf was a critical and vital American-U.S. interest, which required the largest projection of American military power since the end of the Vietnam War. This, however consequential an attack, is not, in my judgment, justification for a counterstrike against Iran, which is only going to lead to an escalation, which in the end, unless we're prepared to literally do what we did to Iraq, which was a disaster, I might add, in Saudi Arabia, that is to say, massive deployment of conventional air and missile power, followed by an occupation of the country. I mean, it's insane, Jed. Unless we're prepared to do that, and even if we were prepared to do that, how are we going to fix the problem of Iran? I mean, we can't look at Venezuela. It's in our hemisphere. You got 50 countries on our side. You even had a duly elected opposition leader, and Mr. Maduro is still in power.
Yeah, let's switch to Israel here too, because yeah. You know this country extraordinarily well. This is Aaron David Miller, senior fellow for the Carnegie Endowment. He has worked with six different secretaries of state, Republicans and Democrats. I saw you quoted a number of places, a number of interviews. Well, heading in the election, you said it was the most consequential political event in the history of Israel. And you're not prone to hyperbole. So I took that in and right away thought, we're going to try to get you on. Right now, we have this uncertainty. We have a lot of people saying this could finally be the end of Bibi Netanyahu. We have people who are wary of how we could just be in this Neverland for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Where is this going, and how vital is this election to the United States of America?
Well, first of all, I think let's be clear, it's vital for despite all of its imperfections, and there are many in any democracy, including ours. it's first and foremost vital for the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I know Benjamin Netanyahu. I happen to like him. But I think on at least one account, over the last decade, you've seen an erosion of democratic norms. You've seen corruption in government. You've seen the rule of law undermined. You've seen a degree of partisanship, frankly, that is undermining the fabric of what is already an incredibly divided and complicated society in Israel. So when I say this is consequential, I really do mean that, first and foremost, for the health and well-being of one of our few democratic allies. And I get into arguments with people who argue that Israel is not a democracy because of its bias against its own Arab citizens. There's no doubt that there's tremendous discrimination that exists, although the Arab parties in this election won 13 seats. And it may well be that the head of that joint list will become the first Arab officially sanctioned head of the opposition in Israel, which would be fantastic, frankly, for Israeli democracy and for the Palestinian citizens of Israel. So it's very consequential. Mr. Netanyahu has contributed mightily to the erosion of many of these norms. I would argue to you it is never wise to count Mr. Netanyahu out. He is still the prime minister. Even if he is indicted for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, which are the three charges that the attorney general has informally leveled against him, it will not be until the end of December. So the only, and Mr. Netanyahu still heads one of the two largest parties in the country. So if we're moving toward a national unity government, which I think is one of the two options that we're going to face, Mr. Netanyahu, unless his own party decides to get rid of him, which could happen, but it's certainly not going to happen now, may well continue to participate in a national unity government with a rotational arrangement in which Mr. Gantz will be prime minister for X number of years, and whoever the head of Likud is, whether it's Mr. Netanyahu or someone else, would be prime minister as well. The order is yet to be negotiated.
Yeah.
So we're either going there or we're going to a third do-over. And while Israel has no written constitution, a third do-over would create Israel's own brand of constitutional crisis.
Aaron, very important information. I know you're busy. Always appreciate the time. We'll reach out to you again.
Be great. Great talking to you, Chad. Take care.
Aaron David Miller, outstanding on this topic. I want you to react to what Aaron had to say. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226 is 1247. That is the Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to learn why Lindis is the top installer of LeafGuard brand gutters throughout the world. Among the things I want to stay with Aaron David Miller, we're getting a number of texts too. Keep them coming. 651-989-9226. I mean, Danny's exactly right. This is like you're stuck between a horrible decision and a terrible decision. You also get the macho factor, right? The Republicans, and some of it was absolutely just, went after Obama for being too deferential, in particular, the red line, Syria. When the president laid it out, everything was set to go, and then it was, well, I'm going to let Congress step in. Okay, if you're going to let Congress step in, you don't say red line.
Right.
You say, I'm going to work with Congress. That was a punt. Okay. The president was going to be the tough guy. Because the president says this all the time. We have more respect worldwide than we ever had before. A lot of us kind of shake our heads at that. He has spent, without a doubt, what is it, $1.5 trillion on the military?
Right.
In his first couple of years. So that shows a military first. It appeared the administration in the middle of summer was about to strike Iran. And the president came out and said, and again, with this president, always remember this, facts are optional, right? He may be telling the truth. He has zero credibility. He's lied over 12,000 times while president. Once I found out how many people would be killed, I said, no, it's too strong. There's other ways to do this. Now we have this attack by Iran, and you've got your Secretary of State saying it's an act of war. That's his guy. It's not like it's mm-hmm. the rogue Secretary of State. The second most important person in this administration is Mike Pompeo, and I don't think it's close. And he's saying act of war. Well, it's an act of war. Don't we have to do something? But Aaron David Miller has forgotten more in the last 1 second about the Middle East than I'll ever know. But he lays out what a lot of people are saying is, okay, you can think in your mind it's the appropriate punishment, and it's the exacting one that is not going to get some sort of response from Iran that engulfs you in even a further response. You really know how Rouhani and those others are going to react to it? But if the president has talked about you don't want to mess with us, and he pulled back before, and he just does sanctions here, and then he's trying to comport himself as we're the new tough guy administration, I don't think it matches up. I think it's a defendable position, but then are you really as different as other administrators? Even Lindsey Graham, his pal, Lindsey, I think, does want us to be involved in a thousand conflicts.
If it was up to Lindsey, we'd be in war.
I think if it was up to Lindsey and he lived in Minnesota, he would have attacked Madison today for those two kids signing with the Badgers, right? Yeah. He said it's a sign of weakness, and Trump says, no, it's a sign of strength. It's way more. Think about when he responded to Syria. And so many supporters said, Obama never would have done that. Obama never would have done that. And his strikes were more powerful, but it didn't change a damn thing. You felt good about it, and I thought there are times when you have to do it. Did it change anything with Assad? Did it change anything with the killing? What changed is when we had our troops in there and we're killing ISIS all over the place. We're not going to be able to go into Iran and put our troops in there, killing all over the place. So it is an extraordinarily difficult decision. And again, he nailed it by slow walking, although he's meeting with his top officials today. Let's see what happens.
It is going to be interesting because I think the president has established a pattern. He loves to rattle the saber. He loves to remind people that exactly. We've got the strongest military in the world.
Yep.
And he's put his money where his mouth is in that regard in terms of funding the military. There's no question about that. But when it comes to actually using said force, I don't know that he's real excited to do that.
No, he's not.
And I think the pattern has shown very clearly that he'd rather not use the military unless absolutely necessary. And I think that experience in Syria is all the more evidence of why am I doing this? Why am I risking American lives if we're not going to, you know, make that much of a difference? I'd rather use the economic hammer, which isn't going to risk American lives in doing so.
And another great point by Aaron David Miller, because they've bought billions from us, they got the fourth biggest military on the planet.
And that's where
why can't we just say, you've been buying our stuff for how many decades?
Knock yourself out.
Go to it, by the way. Yes, we need the problem is we don't have enough allies over there. Right?
Right.
So, again, that was the whole Khashoggi thing. Again, I think the president's response to Khashoggi cut up was embarrassing. The others would say, yeah, I found it embarrassing too. But really, do you want to leave us with Israel and nobody else in a region that is vital? Let me just get to a few of the texts here. How come I never heard from the human loss from the strikes? That's been very quiet. There's no doubt about it. If Trump was risk averse, why did he blow up the treaty with Iran, which brought the U.S. some time and surveillance in Iran? He blew up the deal just showing how much he hates Obama and needs to best him. He did that because he had already decided on the campaign he was going to do that. He's risk averse when it's these new scenarios. My question is, there's no responsibility. We continue to let them do whatever they want. How do we stop that behavior? That's the question, right? Because if Iran feels like they can do this in the Strait, and they can do this, and they're being squeezed by the sanctions, do you really think they're going to stop? They're probably not. But then what is your response? It is an incredibly difficult decision.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.